Yeah, don't you feel sorry for me now? I have to follow that. Thanks. My heart. So open. Thank you. Good morning. Second talk of this month's theme, our dance with the divine. Last week we talked about the divine form, remember? This is it. I mean, all of us. This is the divine form, the physical bodies that we're in. Mine's like puffed up by, like Peeps, but it's the divine form anyway. So today's talk is dancing the dance. We are dancing the dance. And you know, kind of dancing the dance comes after we talk the talk, right? Okay, and then we're walking the walk, and then we get to dancing the dance. It's kind of like walking the walk, except it has a better beat. This is our spiritual path, really. This is the spiritual path. We talk the talk, we get together, we discover these spiritual principles, we align with them, we discuss them, we get them, you know, solidly in our consciousness, we allow them to drop down into our heart space, we begin to practice the principles, we begin to walk the walk, and finally we get to dance, the joyful side, this joyful aspect of living in alignment with principle, of living the life of spirit in form, of being in integrity with our beliefs and living them on a daily basis. We begin to live from that idea that we are that. We are that. There's no place to go. There's nothing to see. There's nowhere to get to. There's nothing to read that's going to get us there. We are that. We came into this life as spirit. And there's absolutely nothing else true about us but that we are spirit in form. And then we live from those principles. That's dancing the dance. That's really what we're doing. So today is the second Sunday of the month. It's also the first Sunday after Easter. And so that makes today Divine Mercy Sunday, according to the Catholic Church. Divine Mercy Sunday always occurs on the Sunday after Easter. And in the observance, the Roman Catholic Church allows its followers, it offers divine mercy, forgiveness, and reconciliation to all. So like for those Catholics who have lapsed, who have gone away from the church, it is their invitation to return to the fold. And priests offer the sacrament of reconciliation. All sins are forgiven, and they get to start over, clean slate. Isn't that a lovely thought? I just like that. Anyway, the history of Divine Mercy Sunday was based on visions recorded by Saint Faustina Kowalski. No, really. She was a Polish nun in the 1930s, and she experienced visions, visitations, and verbal instructions from Jesus about creating a day for forgiveness. A lovely thought. She recorded all of those visions and communications in a 600-page diary that she had, which is, by the way, listed in the Index of Forbidden Books in the archives in Rome. I don't know, don't ask. But in 2000, Pope John Paul II decreed a solemnity. So this became a high feast day. People are invited to go to church to take communion and be forgiven. All bets are off. And I think that's a lovely idea. Now, I don't think we need a special day, you know, in New Thought. I think any day is a great day for forgiveness and reconciliation. I think we practice it every day, don't we? Really? I do. Every day there's some divine forgivingness that goes on, right? Either with yourself or with someone else. We're forever reconciling. So I don't think we really need a special day for it. So last week we talked about the symbolism of Easter, right? The betrayal, the sacred wound, the crucifixion, the resurrection, all of that kind of stuff. And that dying to the old beliefs, things we've outgrown, outdated stuff, beliefs we held, we had to let go of. We have to die to the old in order to welcome in that transformation. Well, this Sunday, Divine Mercy Sunday, it's hard to say, has its own symbolism, really. It is the gift of forgiveness and reconciliation as a spiritual practice. which is really what it is. You know, we can't consider ourselves walking in the light. We cannot consider ourselves enlightened if we're operating from the darkness. And forgiveness is the practice of shining the light on the places that we have previously held in the darkness of our condemnation. Okay? Ernest Holmes said this. He said, "We are told that God will forgive us after we have forgiven others. This is a direct statement and one that we should ponder deeply. Can God forgive until we have forgiven?" That's the question he's asking. If God can work through us, or if God can work for us, excuse me, only by working through us, then this statement of Jesus stands true and is really a statement of the law of cause and effect. We cannot afford to hold personal animosities or enmities against the world or individual members of society. All such thoughts are outside the law and cannot be taken into a heavenly consciousness. So really, God does not forgive us because God has never condemned us to begin with, but it is our ability to self-forgive and to forgive others, which puts us in alignment with divine good. However you want to state it, we cannot reside in a state of enlightenment as long as we are holding things against other people. It's just the way it is. So why don't we do it? Why don't we do it, right? I think we feel justified. We feel justified sometimes, don't we? I'm right and he's wrong, darn it. God, what he did was wrong. Ugh, I am so mad. And you know, that's that old saying about taking poison and expecting other people to die. You know, you've heard that 100 times, right? You know, we're taking the poison. That resentment just is inside of us. Ugh. And the Buddha had a saying too, comparing anger to holding hot coals that we intend to throw at people. I love that. We only wind up burning ourselves. So why do we do that? Why do we hold on to the anger and to the resentment? And why do we hold grudges? Right? That's like the big question here, you know? And so I can answer for myself, and I can answer for all of the stories I've read about the power of forgiveness. And what I've come to find out is that idea of holding resentment, holding on to anger, holding on to grudges, we really do it to protect ourselves. We really do it to protect ourselves. We play the scene over and over and over in our head, don't we? Or else I do. 1,000 times, there you go. And we think to ourselves, I will never let that happen to me again. Right? I will steal myself from that outcome. I have to be familiar with every aspect of that scenario so I never get taken in like that again. Do we do that? Yeah, it just sucks, doesn't it? Anyway, we replay it over and over and over in our heads so that we never forget. Right? So we never forget. So we're smarter and we're better and we're protected from that thing happening to us again. Here's the thing. It doesn't protect us from future hurts. It just keeps the wound open and the pain fresh. And it keeps us vibrating at the level of pain and discomfort. Keeps us living that story over and over and over again. We are never free to manifest the intention of our highest good as long as we are dwelling in our lowest thoughts. Makes sense, yes? This is the law of cause and effect. As long as we are resonating at the level of our anger, at the level of our resentment, at the level of our grudges, we don't get to outpicture at the level of enlightenment, at the level of love, at the level of joy, the level of bliss. It's a house divided thing, right? The spiritual practice of forgiveness frees us from that. Frees us from that. Now, the second part of Divine Mercy Sunday, right, forgiveness and reconciliation, is reconciliation. Now, reconciliation is the practice of acknowledging our interconnectedness with all life. That's how I define it now. reconciliation, reconciling oneself to the truth of our nature. We are all interconnected. Now, the Webster definition of reconciliation is a situation in which two people or two groups become friendly again after they have argued. Or it's the process of finding a way to make two different ideas or facts exist or be true at the same time. Or it's the process of making consistent or compatible. And that's really what we're doing. Ernest Holmes said this in the textbook. Love is forgiveness. Love overlooks the little differences that we have and finds a point of reconciliation with others. Love tolerates a human understanding without which we become divided against ourselves, without which we almost unconsciously become filled with criticism, condemnation, and false judgment. No one can be happy or enjoy the greatest fulfillment in life until he has come to see that most people try to do about the best they can. And when we're able to reach out beyond the indifference and the coldness in life, we reach through the intolerance and the unkindness, only then do we meet the divine center, which is forever established in every person. That's like divine reconciliation. We're looking past the little surface flaws, looking past the little idiosyncrasies we all have. Do we all have them? Don't ask. You know, it's just the way it is. We have all these little things. So it's looking beyond that. The reconciliation is the acknowledgement, I see the divine in you. I know spirit is in there. Ernest Holmes said, the divine center, which is forever established in every person. And you see, here's the thing. We are pack animals. We really are. We love being in groups. We were meant to be in a tribe, a clan, a group. We thrive in communities of like-minded souls. This is who we are as a species. We are our best when we are caring for others, when we are coming together to create a greater good, when we are serving the world, when there's something bigger than just us. We are absolutely at our best. And I think that is the second message of the Easter story I didn't even get to last week. You know, we talked about the Easter story as the betrayal and the crucifixion and the resurrection of the individual and the individual's transformation. But I think the second message of Easter is the story, the bigger story, the symbolism of the second coming, right? The promise of the second coming. What is transforming on the individual level is also playing out on the collective level. And I think that's really what the second coming story was all about. Because we are all interconnected, we are proving that, right, in the field of science. You know, you've read all that stuff in Newsweek and whatever about the interconnectedness of all life, about the quantum field, right? Lynn McTaggart wrote a whole book about it, the interconnectedness of all of us. Well, here, this comes from the University of Boulder. Boulder, Colorado researchers have discovered when we hold hands or empathize with a loved one who is in pain, the very act of doing that is a pain reliever. I love that. And the main reason that we can lower the pain in the sufferer is because our brains go into synchrony. Scientists call this phenomenon interpersonal synchronization. And it's that mirroring effect we have when we sit with each other just in love, just being those tomb watchers, you know? Just being that person that sits and holds the high watch with someone in pain. We begin to mirror our heart rate, even the breathing, and they have found brain waves will sync up. Just sitting and holding the hand of a person. So this is the greater truth, I think, revealing itself in the Easter story, is this transcendence. Not only has the individual transcended, not only has the individual transformed, but we have this universal collective consciousness that is also up-leveling. This is the second coming. The idea that we become conscious. The real transformation is occurring in the soul of humanity. And it's here that this idea of oneness is beginning to grow and deepen and really break through into our conscious awareness. This is the work we are doing. You know, you look at the world and you look at all the messiness sometime and you go, you know, like that. But you realize that there's something wanting to be born. There's something that wants to break through. And this is what we're doing with this, with raising the consciousness. We are talking the talk. We have started walking the walk, right? We've been doing that for decades. Since Ernest Holmes was alive, anyway. We started talking the talk and then walking the walk and putting these principles into action as us, as our behavior in the world. And so as a result, something is being birthed. This new consciousness, this new Jerusalem, is wanting to be birthed through us. And now it's time for us to dance the dance. Put the joy in it, you know? Put the joy in it. Yeah, the spiritual path is not meant, Ernest Holmes like said, you know, forget the morbidity. This spiritual path is meant to be joyous. It's meant to be blissful. It's meant to be fun. It's a wonderment. A wonderment to be aligned with these principles and live our lives, allow spirit to flow through us into everything we do. As an individual, and as a collective, we must dance this dance of joy. And the universal subjective mind becomes, that's where the transformation takes place, along with us. As we evolve, that entire universal subjective mind must reflect that. Brené Brown, in, I don't remember which book this was, Braving the Wild, I think, or Braving the Wilderness. She said, true belonging is a spiritual practice. It's about the ability to find the sacredness in both being a part of something, but also the courage to stand alone. And that's really what this story is all about, isn't it? The personal transformation, and then how that personal transformation builds and actually transforms the collective consciousness. It's an amazing, wonderful, unpredictable, juicy, fun thing that we call life. And it's up to us to suck all the juice out of it. You know, all of the experiences that we can get. We are at the point where we must put the rubber to the road. We've been talking about this for years, right? We come here on Sundays, we come together for weeks, months, years. We celebrated 11 years here at Vision, right? To talk about spirituality, and we do a good job of talking about spirituality. And we encourage each other to find out more about it. We encourage each other to try these principles. Put them to use in your life. Ernest Holmes said, throw the books out the window, remember? After you take the class, he said, throw the books out the window and put this into practice. Actually work it. Walk the walk. And mostly we have done that also, right? With our classes and our workshops, we've actually practiced this stuff. And we've had tremendous manifestations. Don't get me wrong. We share them at the Miracle Minute, don't we? We have demonstrations. We have manifestations. All we have to do is look around this room. Look what you created, you know? Look at this room itself. This was an amazing demonstration in the consciousness of this group that we were able to manifest this. Dancing the dance means leaving the negative behind. So when you're sitting at hospitality today and I wander through and I hear you start going, rah, 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 you know, I'm going to call you on it. Because dancing the dance is about leaving the negative behind, right? Jacob Glass was here yesterday and he said this. He said, have a divine disinterest in your problems, your wounds, and your negative thoughts. A divine disinterest. Don't talk about them. Don't share them. All your problems and all your aches and your pains and all of this stuff that you don't want any more of, Stop dwelling in them. Stop dwelling in them. If we go through life looking for evidence that we don't belong, we're going to find it. It's what we do. If we go through life looking for evidence we're not loved, we will find it. That's what we do. If we go through our life looking at the world as an amazing and wacky, exciting, magical place where we get to fulfill our destinies, our dreams, our highest visions, we will find that also. It's about aligning with the positive. Dancing the dance is about aligning with the positive, with the good. We say, God is good and I am that, right? We've said that before. That's been an affirmation. God is good and I am that. It's about dancing the dance. It's about dancing with the divine. And that's the divine self within us. It's about turning away from the negative. That's the whole get thee behind me, Satan. You know that thing? That's what that means. We're not going to dwell in the negatives anymore. We're not going to resonate at the level of our problems, but we're going to resonate at the level of our possibilities. That's dancing the dance. Please come dance with me. Thank you.
Now I have to follow that.